This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show with me, Ti Xiao Yik. Today we're talking about orphan drugs for rare diseases. Now, rare diseases affect a small percentage of the population, and as such, the availability of drugs for treatment is often limited. In today's show, we will be exploring the challenges of accessing orphan drugs in Malaysia with Associate Professor Dr. Azrul Akmal Shafi'i. Dr. Azrul is a pharmacist and program chairman of the discipline of social and administrative pharmacy with University Science Malaysia, and he's joining us via Skype today. Good afternoon, Dr. Azrul. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. I'm fine. Yes, thank you for having me here.
Dr. Azrul, could you just very briefly explain what are rare diseases?
So, rare disease, as its name says, is a disease that affected a small number of the populations. And it depends on which definitions that you use, but mostly would describe it as less than 1% of the populations. And it's not a single disease. There are various diseases inside this category of rare disease.
So, what would be some of the examples of rare diseases that are that we encounter here in Malaysia?
So, in Malaysia, we have a number of diseases, mostly genetic congenital syndromes, so such as Marfan syndrome, Prader-Willi syndrome. So, there are also some disease which is a disorder of the energy metabolisms, such as the mitochondrial encephalomyopathy lactic acidosis. And also, there are also some disease which is lysosomal disorders like the Hunter disease.
Are they accurately diagnosed?
Well, that's the problem with rare disease. Number one, there are not many experts who knows about the disease. I mean, even the general clinician might have a problem detecting the disease. And not only that, it's the problem of having the proper diagnostic tools to properly diagnose this disease. There was one study published elsewhere that the average time for patients from the manifestations of the disease to a proper diagnosis, it can take from 5 to 30 years. So in between, you have a misdiagnosis, a wrong diagnosis being given, wrong treatment being given, delaying diagnosis and all that. So this is the usual stories that you will hear from many of the rare disease patients.
Apart from the diagnosis challenges, what about when it comes to the treatment? What are the challenges that patients with rare diseases face in that area?
Yeah, so diagnosis is one thing. But I mean, once you diagnose, then another issue will be the treatment for them. Only less than 10% of these rare disease patients have the specific treatment for them. So we had done a study, I think it was in 2016. So out of these rare disease patients, only 60% actually have access to treatment.
Sorry, that's 16.
60%,
okay.
Yeah, but for the orphan drug, which is specific for the conditions, which is, for example, like the ERT, only 20% actually have access to this ERT treatment.
So let's actually, before we go too much into the different types of treatments, if you could very quickly explain what are orphan drugs? What does this term mean? Why do we use orphan with it?
So orphan drug is a drug which is, it's a category of drug which is broadly to categorize treatment for rare disease patients. And in Malaysian definition, we also define orphan drug as drug which is not easy to manufacture or being developed. So that it would be the definition for the orphan drug.
And you mentioned that less than 10% of patients with rare diseases have access to specific treatment. Does this mean that there are readily available orphan drugs for every type of rare diseases known? Or does it mean that a lot of them do not have treatments discovered yet?
Yes, exactly. You're correct on the last point that when I say it's less than 10%, it means that less than 10% of all type of rare disease would have a specific treatment already being discovered for them. Mm-hmm. So the rest, unfortunately, they do not have any treatment.
I see. All right. How are orphan drugs actually distinguished from other therapeutics? I mean, you've talked about how it is not easy to develop and manufacture. Why is that?
Mm-hmm. So I think the main distinguishing features of this orphan drug is because of the target population themselves, which is rare. Mm-hmm. So when it's rare, you create many other problems. So first of all, that it would not be a very attractive investment for pharmaceutical company to develop because you are selling drugs to a small number of populations, so you might not have a strong return to their investment in developing the drug, and which is why many manufacturers are a bit reluctant to actually develop the drug for the specific condition. Which is why, again, earlier on we say that only less than 10% of the disease have the treatment because of these issues. And also because of this rarity of patients, low number of patients. So many of the companies as well, many of the manufacturers find it a bit more problematic to do a proper clinical trial study, which usually involves thousands of patients. Mm-hmm. But now when you have only small pockets of patients here and there, so that make it a bit more complicated compared to other disease.
What are the implications of that for the patients themselves? I mean, are we talking about releasing drugs that are not as robustly tested?
Yes, it can be. So number one, I mean, with this problem, so the implications, number one, that there might not be many treatment available for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or being developed for them. So number two, the evidence base which is being used to approve this orphan drug into the market might be less robust. I mean, mm-hmm. depends on the country. Some countries, they apply the same standards for every drug, regardless whether they're orphan or non-orphan.
Mm-hmm.
So, which actually create a new problems that this orphan drug would have a delayed access to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
But some countries, they employ a more pragmatic approach, having a fast track for orphan drug, where they allow less robust evidence compared to non-orphan drug. But that create a new problems, isn't it? So you would see that. So there are a lot more risks going with orphan drug with this less robust evidence.
I mean, how do you weigh the risk against the benefits? In a sense, you could say that for families, you know, who for patients who have rare diseases, the priority is to have treatment in hand, right?
Yes, exactly. So I would say that for this orphan drug, especially if you are thinking of having a fast track options for this orphan drug, so a prudent way is actually to have it under close monitoring by the regulatory authorities and also the industries. So by right, we should follow up these patient developments and the drug performance on these patients. And in that way, we can actually detect the problem early and record it early so that, mm-hmm. that it can feedback to the whole systems of informing this evidence-based supporting the drug. So we cannot leave it to the patients to just suffer on their own and then leave the safety issues aside. So I think if you are going to have a fast track, so regulatory authorities and also the industry have to take a responsibility as well.
Of course, the other challenge with orphan drugs is the high cost. And I would like to find out more about sort of what is the rationale for the high prices of these drugs and how are patients able to access it if they are so costly. But we'll find that out after the break. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Asrul Akmal Shafi'i, a pharmacist and program chairman of the Discipline of Social and Administrative Pharmacy from University Science Malaysia, about orphan drugs for the treatment of rare diseases. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, Tishao Yi. Today, I'm talking about orphan drugs and rare diseases. Joining me on the line is Associate Professor Dr. Asrul Akmal Shafi'i, Program Chairman of the Discipline of Social and Administrative Pharmacy from University Science Malaysia. Before the break, Dr. Asrul defined what are rare diseases, and we've already started talking about orphan drugs, the challenges around the access to orphan drugs, because fewer than 10% of the rare diseases have specific treatment that has been developed for the condition. And orphan drugs are, of course, drugs that are aimed at treating these very rare conditions. So, Dr. Asrul, before the break, you know, you've mentioned that there's not enough return on investment for pharmaceutical companies to look into developing orphan drugs. And, you know, there's not enough of a cohort for them to do robust clinical trials. But of course, the other huge challenge for patients is the cost. How expensive can orphan drugs be?
Well, I mean, not all orphan drugs will be expensive. I mean, some can be just a vitamin or supplements or just the milk for them. But we also know that there are some orphan drugs which is actually a huge expensive. So, for example, the cost for Idiosurface for the Hunter disease, for the MPS2, it costs about 6,800 ringgit per vial. So if a patient who weighs about 25 kilograms and needs 2 vials per week, that will cost him about 700,000 every year. So what we would have, if you sum it up everything, it can cost actually about 1.6 million depending on the patient. So one patient is 1.6 million per year. So that's a huge cost. So I don't think that any patient can actually afford to shoulder the cost for himself.
Right.
Or neither the family.
Right, right. So then how do rare disease patients actually access these drugs? Let's talk about Malaysia. You know, are they available through government hospitals at a subsidized rate?
So the government, I mean, our healthcare system, I mean, we have to really appreciate our healthcare systems in this way. They, I mean, the government really support, fund these orphan drug to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, because of the high cost, not everyone would get access to such treatment. So orphan drug, like I said just now, for ERT, only 20% of patients who are eligible to receive this ERT have access to the treatment.
And this is through public healthcare.
Through public healthcare,
okay.
So specifically the HKL.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So there are many who actually did not receive the treatment through this funding because of the limit in the budget that we have there.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, they have to either wait or some actually manage to get funding through other sources.
Okay, and what would these other sources be?
So, there are some patients who receive from the society. So, society, the Malaysian Lysosomal Disease Associations have raised the fund 50% of half of the cost of the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest, they have, is contributed from the industries.
So, meaning the pharmaceutical companies then?
Yes.
Okay. The route through the pharmaceutical companies, I mean, how does that work? Are all patients eligible to get support through that channel?
Well, I think it depends on the, on how the industries would negotiate with the societies then who would be eligibles and who are going to be the target. So, but for the precise mechanism of how they to approach the industries, I'm not very clear on that as well.
Okay. For the drugs that are available through public hospitals, are they fully subsidized?
Yes. Okay. They are fully subsidized. So, yeah.
Do you have an indication of how many types of orphan drugs are available through public healthcare?
So we actually have four, which is the, I think if you are interested, so that would be loranidase, idursulfase, galsulfase, and also elasulfase. So this is for various type of disease, so which is covered through the public health.
Okay, all right. And, you know, there's the, of course, the patient access program under the Ministry of Health, which was in the news not too long ago. So late last year, the ministry temporarily suspended it because it was under review by the National Audit Program. And only recently it's been resumed. So can you explain a little bit about the patient access program? And also, what do we need to do to ensure that, you know, at the end of the day, when there's these kind of disruptions to a program like this, it is the patients who bear the brunt of it. So what can we do to avoid something like that from happening again?
So, yeah, I think it was a bit of a surprise last year when we had the suspension of the schemes. Mm-hmm. So the scheme is, in principles, it tried to give access, early access to treatment for the patients by having a variety of tools through the arrangement between the industries and the government. So so most of the tools are financials, for example, it's like giving free drugs for the first year to the patients, and then subsequently have to be paid by the government, or perhaps some bonus that they buy for free two and all that schemes. So so having this would actually allow more patients to actually receive the treatment, because if you are waiting for the budgets to come in, so you might have a problem that the budget might not still be in whilst the patient might still be suffering. So so that's the main intent of the patient access scheme at that point. And also in some places, what they have is this patient access scheme would also cover other risks, for example, like if you are not sure whether the drug is working or not, so this scheme as well will cover payment and compensation during that period.
I see.
So so it means that this patient access scheme ideally will be able to rectify the problem that we have with delayed access to treatment for rare disease patients. So so having it been suspended at that time really bring some of the thing in limbo. So, but I think it's been clarified by the government with the, inter-ministry. I mean, at that time, it was the Ministry of Health who is actually championing this patient access scheme. So the issues came from the Ministry of Finance, if I'm not mistaken. So, so they have clarified that this is nothing. I mean, this all this practice is actually a clean practice, usual industry practice. So, but I think in order to make sure that this scheme actually can work in a more sustainable manner, so so the ministries have actually produced the guidelines, patient access scheme guidelines for the industries and also the government to follow through. But I also feel that I think, I mean, with this patient access scheme, so I think a closer monitoring, the sharing of monitoring should be the responsibilities of both the government and the industries, so that then you can have more close monitoring of the effectiveness of the schemes to the patients.
Currently, who does the monitoring?
Actually, the government tries to rely on the industries. To do this monitoring, one of the biggest thing with the monitoring is the lack of a registry.
Right.
So, yeah, so registry is crucial information for both clinicians, the governments, and also industries to record who's who have the disease and who don't have the disease.
This is a registry. Sorry, this is a registry for rare diseases, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So without that information, even now, we are still trying to figure out how many people actually in Malaysia who have the disease.
Mm.
So without that accurate information, we might have a problem even monitoring the effectiveness of patient assessment. So I think in this way, then perhaps both parties, the industries and the government, can actually work together to create the industries for the registry for the rare disease patients, which would perhaps will be very useful not only for monitoring the patient assessment scheme, but also for the epidemiology of the disease.
Is there anything being done to push for this registry? I have heard some talk about it, but you know, where are we on this, and what progress have we made at all?
There are efforts on that, but I have to say that I'm also not very clear in what stage that we have in these registry provisions. Mm-hmm. But I know that the Ministry of Health has been actively trying to gauge the number of the patients, but from just a survey of the provider.
Okay. And, you know, of course, we talked about earlier the process for the approval of orphan drugs, and that's where oftentimes the delay comes in. I mean, orphan drugs have to follow the same procedures for approval in our MOH drug formulary. So what do you think should be done to expedite the approval of these drugs?
Well, sometimes it's because just of the lack of understanding of the rare disease themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So which is why I think one of my recommendations is actually to have not only clinicians to be in the panel reviewing the applications, but also perhaps people who are really involved in the care of the patients, for mm-hmm. example, like nurse, or maybe the patient family themselves, to have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
In the panel, because of the rare disease, sometimes people might not be able to actually figure out how does it look like. I mean, what would be the extent of the suffering if people do not have access to the treatment? So having a voice of people who are actually suffering the disease or who have to care for such patients, so that would actually give more value to this process.
Yes, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of patient groups, advocacy groups that are very strong, the Rare mm-hmm. Diseases Society, the We Care for Spinal Muscular Atrophy, for instance. So mm-hmm. That does sound like their voices would really be needed here.
Exactly. Yeah. I think their contributions have been remarkable. I mean, over the years, we have seen more voices about rare disease and how actually lack of treatment affecting them.
Mm. You know, in the United States, they have an Orphan Drug Act that was
yes.
implemented in 1983. Would similar legislation in Malaysia be justified?
I think it will help. It will help having these rare disease legislations in the country. So, I mean, one of the things with this legislation is trying to stimulate interest by pharmaceutical company to develop drug for the rare disease patients.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have this this sort of legislation, so number one, we'll be able to contribute to perhaps more incentive for the pharmaceutical company to develop more drug for the rare disease patients. But also, at the same time, we also try to secure the channel for and the welfare for the rare disease patients in the country by having proper legislations or even a framework of how actually they'll be able to assess the treatment.
One of the key aspects of the Act is, for the US at least, they have the market exclusivity for 7 years, you know, so then it
yes.
becomes a question of will the company have a monopoly, you know, over a particular condition? So, you know, how do you balance that out to ensure that there's healthy competition?
Yeah, that's a dilemma that actually people are realizing now globally. So they try, on one hand, they try to stimulate the interest of the pharmaceutical company by giving them more protections and more commercial interest there, incentive there. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, what happened is that that exclusivity that they give to this pharmaceutical company can create this monopolistic industry that can dictate the price. So they realize now that many of the countries are actually at the mercy of these industries when receiving the price of the drug to the public. So in this case, then, so one of the things that can be can be used is trying to find or negotiate the proper price appropriate for this drug based on the value that it can give in terms of the benefits to the patients, the benefits to the society, and so on. So, and this is in the approach now, it's commonly called is value-based pricing.
Yeah, but when it comes to negotiating prices, I mean, the thing about negotiating is that you need to have something to leverage. And when you have such a small group benefiting out of it, you don't have much power in that sense. So how can our government have sort of be able to better negotiate?
I think there are several ways that the government can try to make sure that the negotiations will be more successful. I mean, number one, using a value-based pricing. I mean, try to look into the value of the drug, so what it can give to the patients, what it can give to the society, and come up with the approximate price based on the value that can be given by the drugs. So that's one thing that the government can use. Mm-hmm. So number two is actually try to increase the bargaining power by trying to perhaps establish a regional procurement fund with our neighboring countries. So these actually have been pursued successfully in vaccine by the Latin American countries. So over there, they group together to buy vaccines, and they actually managed to reduce the price by more than 50%. Of the vaccine compared to those vaccine which is bought outside this alliance.
Right.
So I think on that same line, perhaps government can actually try to pursue that level of purchasing power.
What is the what would be the role of something like compulsory licensing or government licensing? Because Malaysia has used it more recently for hepatitis C, so Sofosbuvir, for instance. Does it have a role to play here in orphan drugs?
So compulsory licensing is, to be exact, I think Malaysia have used it twice in Malaysia. The good thing about this compulsory licensing, of course, as you can see in the case of Hep C, it reduced the price so much that it can actually allow more patients to access the treatment. But on the other hand, you have a tricky problem when you are sending the wrong signals to the industries.
Right.
So what we try to do on the first line of the access for treatment is trying to make sure that there are more drugs being developed for rare disease patients. But on the other end, we have the problem of trying to make sure that more people having access to the treatment. So compulsory licensing, even though they would be able to increase the number of patients who can access the treatment, but we send a signal to manufacturer that there is not much economic incentive to develop the treatment if the patent can be just taken away from them for the public. So I think we have to be very careful with compulsory licensing, although it might be attractive options to reduce the price and increase the access for the patients. But we also have to make sure that we do not do this at the expense of developing new drug for rare disease patients.
Speaking of developing drugs, can you very briefly talk about generic or biosimilar orphan drugs? Where are we on that, and do you think that's a viable way forward?
Well, if they are, So then that actually can reduce price by 30 to 50% of for these patients. But we also note that orphan drug is not easy to replicate with the biosimilar industry. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, there are about I think less than half of these orphan drug have a generic or biosimilar alternative, but less than 30% of them actually receive approval from the authorities. Because there's actually a huge challenge in technicalities when trying to produce generic biosimilar that can work as good as the innovative drug, and with lack of patience to test it on, so that make it more complicated.
Okay, we are talking about orphan drugs and rare diseases today. You know, we've gone a lot into access to orphan drugs, you know, looking at cost, approval, development. But one thing that I would like to find out after the break will be funding, increasing the budget for orphan drugs. The government had in the budget 2019 also put in some specific allocation for rare diseases. So I'd like to find out how that will be used, or what are the priorities for funding there. On the line with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Azrul Akmal Shafi'i, Program Chairman of Discipline of Social and Administrative Pharmacy from University Science Malaysia. We'll be right back after this break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today, we're talking about orphan drugs and rare diseases. And on the line is Associate Professor Dr. Azrul Akmal Shafi'i, Program Chairman of the Discipline of Social and Administrative Pharmacy from University Science Malaysia. We have discussed a lot about the issues around access to orphan drugs. And we've talked about some of the methods that can be used to control or sort of mitigate the high prices that come with orphan drugs, but also we need to increase the budget for orphan drugs. And you know, in budget 2019, rare diseases actually had its place in there. The government allocated 50 million ringgit for several needs, and rare diseases being one of them. So presumably, if it's equally allocated among the five needs, it will work out to be about 10 million ringgit for rare diseases. And I believe that was similar to budget 2018 as well. Dr. Azrul, do you think that 10 million is enough, or what should the priority be in using this funding?
So yeah, I think first of all, it's really, we have to be really appreciate the government efforts to actually put a specific allocation for rare disease. I mean, prior to 2011, there were no specific allocations for rare disease. So having this a specific amount allocated for rare diseases is actually quite an achievement. So, but again, it might, even though the amount has been increasing over the years, but it's still not enough to sustain the treatment for the patients. And mind you that the patients is not a one-off treatment. So many of them require a lifetime treatment. So it means that the patient, we need, this commitment to be sustained over the years, and also with an increasing funding as well to make sure that more and more patients be able to benefit from such treatments. But there are of course a few things related to this funding that can be improved. I think first and foremost in the funding is only for facilities under the Ministry of Health, specifically Hospital Kuala Lumpur. So unfortunately, okay, so university hospitals do not have access to this fund.
Right.
So, yeah. So even though what we have now in Malaysia, what we have is all these expertise. I mean, one expertise is actually in HKL, but there are the other expertise that we have in terms of the rare disease patients is actually belong in the university hospitals.
Mm.
So having a patients but not having a fund to treat them, so that is actually quite a loss to the patients and also to the hospitals.
So how do university hospitals access any sort of funding at all?
No, I think I'm afraid that many of them have to be transferred to HKL because they're unable to receive the treatment in the university hospitals.
Right, okay.
So this is a loss of resources, but also a loss of the opportunities for teaching purpose in the university hospital.
Right. So what can we do to increase the budget for orphan drugs?
Well, I think that's a tough. So I believe that a higher education should be given for the fund. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fund should be also be accessible to the university hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So that then the care for the patients will not overburden the experts that we have in HKL. And to make sure that we can have an increased access, so perhaps the government can think of innovative way to increase the budget besides having the budget step in from our general budget
mm-hmm.
of the ministries. So maybe the government can actually explore one of them is the use of a trust fund.
Right.
Yeah, so we might have a contribution from the industries and similar kind of donors who might be able to contribute and make sure that the trust fund be able to provide a more sustainable funding for patients who do not have access to treatment right. in the usual public healthcare facilities.
Right. What about insurance companies? What role can they play here?
So, yeah, insurance company in Malaysia usually do not cover for orphan drug and rare disease, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this should be rectified. But then I think one of the ways that the insurance company can actually play a role is providing the coverage, but also have a specific part of these drugs to be reinsured by the government rather than insurance schemes to actually bear the cost on their own. So that's one of the ways that the insurance company, because I think many of the insurance company might not be covering it considering that there is a low number of patients and also the high cost of the drug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so one of the ways actually trying to have these specific drug costs, specific drug to be reinsured through the government.
Okay, all right. I would like to ask you for sort of a message from you, because when we are talking about funding, obviously, you always need more funding. But when rare disease patients or advocates, when they ask for more funding for orphan drugs, one of the things they are told is that funding should be used for other diseases that affect more people, you know, treatment for diabetes, for instance, instead of rare diseases that affect only a small number of the population. So what would be your message there?
I think, so we have to know that rare disease is unlike other disease. So they are, I mean, with rare disease patients, if they do not have access to their treatment, then they would have no access at all to any treatment. So unlike patients with diabetes, for example, so if you don't have access to the expensive DPP-4 treatment and so on, you still be able to be treated with metformin, which is much, much cheaper mm-hmm. compared to the other options, but still can reduce your blood glucose. Mm-hmm. But for rare disease patients, if they do not have access to the treatment that they need, so it means that they won't have any help or any medicine that is treating them. So mm-hmm. that's one of the things that we need to think of for rare disease patients. So without that, we are actually denying them treatment for their conditions. I think the governments and all parties should actually try to sit together to briefly explore innovative mechanisms to make sure that patients with rare disease would have a proper access to their treatment.
Bravely explore. I like that very much. Thank you so much, Dr. Azrul. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Azrul Akmal Shafi'i, Program Chairman for Discipline of Social and Administrative Pharmacy in University Science Malaysia. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.